Good evening, everybody. This is James from podcast, or what are we called now? Let me start it again. This is why we edit. All right, here we go.
Hey, James.
Hey, Chris. Welcome, everybody. This is another edition of Fuel Stop Chaps, the Chats, the podcast. I'll get it one of these times, but
no, we came up with this name.
I know.
It's not like somebody gave it to us.
I know.
It's Fuel Stop Chats. Like when we're on a ride,
I know,
and it's a group of us,
you know,
and there's three of us tonight. We stop for fuel. We talk about stuff.
Especially
while we're waiting on Angie, right?
Exactly.
I mean, right. So we talk about stuff.
Exactly.
And that's why we named the podcast Fuel Stop Chats.
All right. Well, I'm just going to shut up now because I can't get my T's and P's correct.
It's what it is, man. So
welcome
we're
to
really,
the show, Angie.
We're really excited tonight. We've got Angie Sando with us. Angie, you had listened to a podcast of us speaking with Jerry from North American Biker Rescue, and he told me your story, and I was just I was inspired. I was fascinated. I was intrigued. And then we had our prep call, so I got to kind of engage with you a little bit and just really, really excited and thrilled that you took the time to join us tonight for a podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
There's so much to talk about. This is going to be like a Fuel Stop Chat because with you, we get to talk about riding. We get to talk about fuel stops. We get to talk. I'm teasing that because it's going to be good. We're going to get to that. But yeah, y'all hold on here. We get to talk about music. Most people don't know, or maybe they do know. For the one or two that don't, Angie is the lead vocalist in an AC/DC cover band.
Wait a second.
No?
Angie was Angus Young in the AC/DC tribute band, Bear Rump, and the lead vocalist in her current band, Lefty and the Goons.
There you go.
There you go. I know. I mix it up all the time.
Well, I watched the video clip. You were definitely the lead singer. So I was like, I just thought that was how it always was.
Yeah, see, I was watching the Angus stuff where you actually have on the suit and you're doing the circles around. While playing, it's just phenomenal. Awesome.
Thank you.
and the, you know, inspirational speaking, movies.
Yeah.
I mean, just so this is going to be fun. There's a lot of places we could go, but I do want to start with maybe just start with your story, because while we talked about playing the guitar, we talked about singing, we talked about riding motorcycles, we talked about books and movies. What we didn't talk about is the fact that you're doing all this with one hand.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So it's funny. I was thinking the other day, when did I decide that I wanted to share my story. I don't know. I mean, I was born with, I guess at the time it was called congenital birth defects, and the most noticeable of which is my right arm, which, you know, I just heard of this phrase a little while ago called limb difference. I never even heard of the limb difference. But yeah, it's a limb difference, and I don't have a functioning hand per se on the right side. So growing up, I mean, that's all I knew. And I was always encouraged to do whatever I set my mind to, and, you know, never learned the word can't. And whenever I did stuff, I mean, I had to do it. I don't know what it was, but I had to do it the way it had to be done. So for instance, if I was going to play football, I had to have the uniform. I had to have the helmet. And if I was going to play hockey, I had to have the, you know, everything had to be just like I saw it on TV. So the thing that intrigued me the most when I was a kid was motorcycles, because my sister was dating a guy that actually used to race in Daytona. I grew up in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. So he once showed up with his buddy at my parents' house where I was living with my sister at the time. And I was just a little girl, maybe about five. And I was very shy at the time, which some people find very hard to believe that I was ever shy. And I was hiding behind her leg when he pulled up with his buddy. And I remember, to me, they looked like superheroes. You know, they had the full face helmets and these bikes. And I was just, I to this day, I remember being so captivated by it. And each of them gave me a short ride around the block, and it was enough to hook me. So my dad and I, we always used to watch like sports and stuff on TV and play them. But when Wide World of Sports was on and Evel Knievel was on, that, don't bug me, I had to watch that. And
yes,
every crash, every didn't matter. And I look back, you know, this was in the, you know, well, the 60s, right? I must have driven my parents crazy because as I was growing up, you know, you start, you know, I was riding a bicycle and all this stuff, but the kids were starting to ride what there were mopeds. And some, we referred to some bikes as chappies. They're like mini bikes, I guess. And I remember, I have to have it. I must have driven them nuts. And they finally, they got me this moped, this yellow thing, and I with a black seat, you know. And I remember mixing the oil and the gas and you know, right? Don't ask me how I rode it. Yeah, I don't remember what they did. They must have done something, you know, so I could obviously ride it. I don't even remember how I made the thing go. I just remember pedaling the damn thing to get it to start. I rode that thing into the ground, and to me, that was a motorcycle. I was racing, and I had a full face helmet with a dark shield, and I had leathers. I had leathers to ride a moped because, you know, I said I have to have that look, right? And I went to school in an area that was called Westmount, and I lived in Côte-Saint-Luc, so it was up on you had to go up a pretty big hill. And one day I was 14 maybe. Maybe older. I don't remember. But I know that I was going to school, high school, and I had the helmet and the leathers, and I'm going up the hill, and there's a city bus behind me, and there's, you know, he's right on me. He's pushing me and pushing me. And I remember thinking, oh, come on. I started pedaling, right, to get the bike to go faster. And I was, you're not on a bike. You're on a motorized bicycle. It's not a motorcycle. And then doesn't this kid pass me on a 10-speed? That was it. You know? The shield was all fogged up and everything. I look cool, man. But yeah, nothing ever stopped me. You know, I guess. I mean, but after that experience, I you know, I say 14. I must have been around 16 because it didn't take long. I went to a motorcycle shop and started talking to them about, is it possible to get a motorcycle? And I remember, you know, growing up is back then, I mean, yeah, you'd get the looks and the stares. I mean, I did look different, and that was hard for me sometimes. I mean, I'd hide my arm a lot, and, you know, it just bothered me that people would look at me sometimes and roll their eyes in pity. And say, you know, you poor deer, how you poor child. And that used to drive me nuts. But it's okay. It made me stronger, and I never took offense to it. It just hurt me because it just sometimes made me feel like I always had to do things to prove myself to people. Like when I went to the motorcycle shop and I was talking to the fellow about motorcycles, and I remember he pointed me right at the scooters, and he said, you know, I think we could put you on this. It's an automatic. It's something that could be simple. And inside I was going, yeah, I don't want to look over there at the scooters. I want to look to the other side where the motorcycles are. And looking back, I know he was trying to help me and you know, help me get to something that had a bit more power and everything, but it's not what I wanted. And looking back, that was around when the Honda Matic would have been out. So I don't know if they weren't carrying it or didn't know or didn't want to explore. I don't know, but it wasn't to be at the time.
It just sounds like, yeah, it was like an easy button.
Yeah, probably, you know.
Well, I have to give the guy props for not just saying categorically no. I mean, at least he was
showing
you something. I heard a great phrase. You were talking about the limb difference and the terminology. And I heard a guy say one time, people are not disabled, they're differently abled.
Mm-hmm,
and I love that. I thought, oh man, I got to burn that in my brain because they're just differently abled. And I thought, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, I remember, you know, you're getting into the workforce, you're trying to get a job, and it was tough. I mean, again, you're being judged based on how you look. I even went for an interview with at the government to get a file clerk. And I remember I was in my early 20s then. And I remember they were asking me, well, you know, how would you hold a file? Because you got to take a file out of off the shelf, and you have to write down on a card what the file is. A long time ago, write down on a card.
Okay? Yeah.
You gotta write down on a card the file you took, and you got to put the card back where the file was. How would you do that? And my problem is that I guess it's sometimes it's a problem, and I speak my mind. And I remember back then I said, well, how would you do it? And I knew, this is not going to happen.
There you go.
But, you know, it's just things that you learn about yourself. And I never take offense. I actually appreciate people asking me, you know, questions. And it's just, I guess I, you know, I was born this way. And that's why I just do things my way. And you know, over the years, you know, life takes over and you eventually do get a job and you start working. And I remember I was very fortunate. But you talk about, you know, limb difference. I mean, just because someone may have two hands doesn't mean you can do things either. You might have two hands, but you can't play guitar. So does that mean that you can't do stuff? Or we all have our limitations and that's all cool. Because one time I had this job and I remember paper again, you know, you're printing paper, invoices or paper. I was doing data entry at the time. And I remember taking an invoice out of this, I guess it was like a banker box. And I had difficulty putting it back in. You know, they're so thick and all the paper, and the kids today wouldn't know what I'm talking about, right? But, you know, and I remember the manager at the time, he came up and he says, I hear you have trouble, you know, putting this back in the banker box. You're not putting them in order and you're leaving them there. And I said, well, yeah, I'm asking someone for help. He said, well, you told me you can do anything. And I said, that's right. I said, but you have two hands. When's the last time you picked up a guitar? He says, you kill me. He says, you're going to give me a heart attack.
So when did you, so we just added superhero to the list.
Oh no.
We got that earlier. But when did you, so you kind of talked about the hook on the motorcycles. When did you get hooked on playing guitar?
Well, I was around 12, 13, was Led Zeppelin. Jimmy Page got me into playing guitar, and Angus Young is the reason I kept playing. I remember I listened to, my sister is 15 years older than me. So when I was a little girl in the 60s, you know, she's listening to Led Zeppelin and The Doors and all that kind of stuff. And I picked up the album cover of Led Zeppelin 1, that album. And I saw the pictures of the guys on the back, and I don't know, that did it. Listening to the playing, and I wanted a Les Paul, of course, you know, Sunburst guitar. That's what Jimmy Page used to play. And I remember I went to look at it and I picked the thing up and it was so heavy. Yeah, so that didn't happen. But that's when I started, and I actually started without a pick or anything. I'd use my right arm and play, and it would bleed and hurt. And I sat there with a Mel Bay chord book on the floor, and I taught myself all the chords, and then I tried to pick. And my mom took me to a place that at the time was known as the rehab, and we talked about prosthetics and different things that they might be able to make me. And it was a real rudimentary thing. It was like some kind of plastic with a clip on it, and I clipped the pick on there, and that's how I play. And when I found Angus, because I had a pen pal in Australia in the 70s, so I knew about AC/DC before people in North America. When I found out about Angus, that was it. Figure, here's this guy, and he's a lot smaller than people might realize. He's a small guy. And if he can play that guitar, and wow, the SG was so light. So yeah, it was, I've been playing it. And I was always into music. I mean, my parents always sang in the house, you know, and in school I was in band. I used to play an E flat horn. Nobody knows what that is, but I did play it.
I tell you what, everybody thinks his guitar strap was intentionally too long. It couldn't get any shorter. And the thing was still down at his hip. So, but he figured it out. You know, it's funny. I got turned on to NXS through an Australian friend when I was in Germany. And I remember coming back to the States and my brother's like, dude, you got to check out this new band. And he puts in this, it was a cassette tape. He puts in this cassette tape and I'm like, oh yeah, these guys are really good. NXS. I saw these guys in Wiesbaden, Germany in a bar with like 300 people. And he was like, so you know who these guys are? And I'm like, oh yeah, Diesel. And I know a lot of Australian bands, but,
you actually got to hang out with them too, didn't you?
They asked if there were, you know, they did the whole run right there in Germany. So are there any Germans in the crowd? Of course there are. Right. And then it was, are there any Americans in the crowd? Yes, of course there were. And then he said, more importantly, are there any Aussies in the crowd? My girlfriend was the one. Huh? And so this guy came out a little bit later in the middle of their set and said, hey, you know, we guys would like to hang out and, you know, meet everybody afterwards. And yeah, let's do it. And so, you know, the bar basically shut down. Everybody left. They were packing out. And we sat in the bar, just them and us and the bartender, of course. you know, it was surreal when you saw the explosion when they hit North America. Same thing with, you know, Little River Band, AC/DC, these other, you know, phenoms that just Keith Urban. I mean, there's so many great Australian musicians that people don't even know, because a lot of those bands, I was told, they felt like they were selling out if they came to the States.
Wow.
You know, and the Aussies would go, okay, well, they're not popular anymore. Let's tune into these guys. So getting kind of back to the motorcycle and getting into it, it was a Honda, right? Is that what you were looking at?
Yeah. Well, what happened was, you know, years go by and we formed that AC/DC band in 2001. And over the years, we started doing different shows, and we were doing like over 50 something gigs. And this was part time. We all had regular jobs too, but we loved it so much. And
that's a lot of gigging.
Oh, it was a lot of gigging, booked by the husband, the drummer.
Those drummers.
I know. Well, I used to say, well, you're the drummer, and that's great. You book it, but I'm a star. Shh. You know, so you just booking them. But it was a lot of fun and met a lot of cool people. And that's when I started realizing the effect that I had on people, because I used a prosthetic. It was a different type of prosthetic now, but people would come up to me and share their stories and say, if you can play guitar and you can run around and do what you're doing, you don't know how you're inspiring me to do this, that, or the other thing. I met some incredible people, and we started doing, you know, more shows, which led to biker events. And when we started doing the biker events, well, wow, there's those motorcycles, and everybody wanted to give Angus a ride, and, you know, and my heart started going, and I felt like that kid again. You know, I'm all around the bikes. And I remember talking to my husband and saying, we really got to get a bike. We got to, you know, I love them so much, and I miss them. And it's not the same. I developed friends that would always take me for a ride anytime I wanted, but it's obviously not your bike. Right. But it was never the right time. It was always, we're going to wait for tomorrow. Let's wait. And then I got diagnosed with breast cancer in February 2014. And I realized, you know, even though we all know that the end is inevitable, you know, you just don't think that way sometimes. And I thought, you know, you can't keep waiting. So a couple of years after that, yeah, we went to the motorcycle show, one of the motorcycle shows in Toronto, because I live in Ontario now. And that was in 2017. And we went to the one in February, which is like a manufacturer's type of show. And I went to every single manufacturer to talk to them about the possibility of having a motorcycle that I could ride. Nobody would give me the time of day except for Honda. The guys there, Sid Butler, my hero, and Nick Smirnu, they spent, I think, a total of 3 to 4 hours with me that day at a motorcycle show where there's people coming. They want to buy all the time, talking about the bike, introducing me to the 2017 Honda Rebel. Which was the first time they changed the model. So it had the fat tires. And I remember sitting on that thing, and it just felt so right. And I remember him saying to me, Sid, he said, you know, we're here to sell you fun. He said, so if something happens and it doesn't work out, this isn't like buying a car. You know, you won't have a problem if you put down a deposit and you have to, you know, change your mind for whatever reason. But wow, what an experience that was to realize that my dream was finally going to happen. And I knew it was possible because prior to the show, I was Googling, you know, one-handed riders, one-handed motorcycle riders. And it was amazing, the people that I found. And I was thinking, wow, if they can do it, then there's hope for me. And, you know, so we made it happen. I mean, it was a bit of a challenge. It had some ups and downs because I did make the order, and then I canceled the order, and then I went back and ordered it again. The biggest challenge was having someone that would train me, because, you know, when you take a motorcycle course, you use the bikes that they provide. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do that. I'd have to use my own. So getting it modified, that wasn't really as big a challenge as I thought. It was who's going to accept me on my own bike. And again, thanks to Nick, I think he was the regional sales manager at the time at Honda. Canada. He hooked me up with Learning Curves. It's a riding school. Don Radicop is the owner there. And he said, you show up on a bike, any kind of bike, I will teach you how to ride it. It was just incredible. Really. I mean, I got really emotional about it because it was something that was near and dear, and I really wanted to do it. And if not for those guys, if not for the timing, if not for someone believing in me, it takes one person. They made it happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you what,
quick question, Angie. I mean, you get the bike. You know that you need to get it retrofitted for, you know, the controls to be from your right side to your left side. So, cause everything's going to be controlled on the left-hand side. How far away did you have to take the bike to get the retrofit, the retrofits done? Was it something local, or did you have to ship this bike off? Where did you go to?
Well, this was the cool thing. I bought the bike, you know, in Toronto. The dealership was in Barrie, Ontario, which is, oh, maybe about 90 minutes north of where I live. So it's, you're starting to go a little bit north, but not too far north. And the fellow that I found that was recommended to me is in Angus, Ontario, which is maybe about half an hour from Barrie.
Angus.
Mission Cycle. Angus. I know, you see, everything comes full circle.
Oh yeah. There's something spooky going on.
That's there. Crazy. I know, right?
Yeah. So, you know, Todd Topper, he's the owner there, and he's all about safety. And he'd actually modified a bike for a young man that's paralyzed from the waist down.
So what's the name of the place that you had gotten it that took care of you?
Mission Cycle.
Mission Cycle.
Mission
and they're Cycle. In Angus.
Angus, Ontario.
Ontario. Yeah. Well, yeah. There you go. If anybody's listening and knows somebody that would like to get back on two wheels, you know, a while back, I had tried to start a 501 Charlie nonprofit here in the States. I'm a vet. Chris is a vet. We have a lot of friends that are vets. And there's a lot of people coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, yeah. Missing, you know, above knee, below knee amputees, arm amputees. And our mission was to get them back on motorcycles. Unfortunately, I couldn't devote the time that I needed to for that. And we ended up folding it up. But I see a lot of places out there that are trying to do that and get involved with the people. And just, you know, knowing another place that's going to be able to do this and do the retrofit for a bike is great. And if anybody, you know, even if it touches one person that can tell somebody that gets them back to the dream of riding, this podcast is worth it.
Oh. Yeah. And I tell you, Angie, you were talking about how emotional and stuff. It snowed 16 inches here the other day. And I was out in my garage because today it was sunny and 40 degrees. I still get emotional when I get a chance to get on a bike. So I can't imagine. But so that's only 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I started riding in June of 2017. I had to ride the bike in order to learn about it, you know, how the controls would work.
Sure.
So what they did with the Rebel was they took the throttle, everything on the right side, he disconnected. And he made, first it was a finger throttle. So it was actually something that he installed on the left handlebar. And I would just use my index finger to kind of, you know, push that. Yeah. And then he moved the front brake to the left-hand side. And he took the clutch. He got it. He sent it off to Ohio. I think it's EFM Auto Clutch, if I remember correctly. Or EFM, right? Yeah. And they use the clutch components from your bike. And they put ball bearings in it. They do all kinds of funky things. It came back. He put, you know, Todd put it back in the bike. And then what it would do is it would basically would, you know, replace the clutch, if you will. So based on the RPMs, you know, it would act as the clutch. And then I would still shift. So it would disengage the engine automatically. So it kind of turned it into like a semi-automatic and I would still shift.
Like a speed shift assist.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, kind of like a recluse in that, you know, similar to that kind of thing. So
yeah.
That was really cool. I mean, I loved it. Yeah, it was great. And then I took the riding course and, you know, it's graduated licensing in Ontario. So it was 2 years ago because it's 2021 now, right? So 2019, I got my full license. So yeah, it's been a journey. It started off on the Rebel. Within 3 months, I was on a Honda Shadow Aero. And then I found the CTXs, the Honda CTX dual clutch, and I couldn't find it in Canada. I had to go down to New York, to North Tonawanda, to Bob Weaver Motorsports, and they were amazing, amazing, amazing. And found that CTX. That is an awesome bike. I love that bike, and it makes it easier for someone like me because if you either can't use a clutch for whatever reason, or you have a situation like me, you know, all we had to do was move the throttle and the front brake. That was it.
And that's the Honda 700 that you have now?
Yeah, it's a 700. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing the pictures of that. That's a sweet looking bike.
Yeah. The dual clutch and the Rebel's coming out now with a dual clutch 1100.
Oh, really?
Well, I got my eye on that one. Yep.
Wow.
I mean, the Rebel has always been notorious for being a, you know, I have short leg syndrome, like Chris has short leg syndrome. Is it going to be, you know, a pretty lowered bike? Because Rebels have always been, you know, really low, which has been great. And if they're going to put that in an 1100 frame, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's it's well, I was talking to the fellow that sold me the Rebel in the first place, you know, at Barry Honda. And yeah, he's expecting it to come out in the next month or so. So I said, yeah, I'd like to sit on it and get a feel for it. Because you're right. You know, it was a lower bike. And I would like to get the NC. That's a beautiful bike too. You know, it's a dual clutch and everything, but I'm challenged. I'd have to run and jump and get, you know, get a springboard to get on the thing. And
like when I tried to get on Yvonne's 1200 GSA, I said, maybe we're going to have to get a 5 gallon bucket just so I can get on things off the ground. So, you know, now you've gotten, so we're 3 years into this and we're graduating rapidly to rocket fuel. So have you taken any trips of any distance?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my husband and I, I love the ocean. So we've gone down from, we did the Finger Lakes, in New York. We've done all that. And I love riding in Ontario. I mean, we've got great roads in Ontario and up north, any 500 series roads. They're beautiful. The Muskoka is gorgeous area and all that. But I really love history. And I love American history. I love Canadian history, too. But there's something I know, right? That's why this is a mixed blessing. I mean, really, you know, I love American history. So I really love riding through the small towns. And you feel the charm and all that. So we've done some rides where it's just pick a road kind of thing. But we went down to people are going to say, what's this got to do with American history? But it's the water too. So we went down to Wildwood, New Jersey, and from there we went to Ocean City.
And you're close to me.
Right. That's not
rode right past me.
We went through Pennsylvania.
Well, Ocean City, I mean, we go to Ocean City with the kids all the time. I go down there fishing with a buddy. Yeah, I got a charter captain friend of mine, John Tkach. Cool name for a boat captain, Tkach. that's really his name. But yeah, Ocean City, man, you're really close. I mean, you're an hour and a half, 2 hours from me, maybe.
Really? Wow. Okay. Well, you see, once the border opens up, once all this COVID stuff is behind us. You know, but we went down to Maryland and then we did the Chesapeake Bay Bridge.
Yeah, of course.
Virginia Beach. I mean, that was wicked. And
wasn't windy, was it?
Yeah, actually it was. Yeah. and Dumbbell Ange that, you know, had her GoPro on. I thought I had it set on video, but it wasn't. It was actually taking pictures. So I've got thousands of pictures of us riding on that bridge because it kept snapping every second.
You can loop those time loop photos and make it a like it makes it look like time lapse film. Yeah, it'll tag them together.
I would like that very much because
so you know, on this lengthy trip, and we talked about this once before, but you wouldn't tell me the answer. But I said, Angie, what's one thing that people would find interesting, but they're afraid to ask? And you said, well, we gotta talk about when we take our fuel stops. And I have to go to the bathroom and I got all this gear on. And I said, okay. So Angie, how long or how many cigars do we get to smoke while we're waiting for this event? What's it like? And what do you ride with for gear?
Well, it depends on the day. I always wear, I always have an armor jacket on. So it's usually Joe Rocket and I have an armor jacket or depending if it's in the summer, right. It's one of those mesh ones or else I've got the leather. So usually that's what I've got. And I've got my, Kevlar jeans, you know, and if it's a bit chilly, then I got the chaps on top of that. So with the boots and I'm always geared up and I have my, it's either a leather glove or an armor glove type thing, but on the right side, it's always a sock. My husband suggested that. He said, why are you trying to put a glove on your right side? Why don't you just use a sock? And he was right. I mean, that's fast, right? That's fast.
That's quick.
Right? That's fast. But yeah, when we stop, everybody knows, go for a walk, do whatever you got to do, because it's just going to be a while. And I'm very conscientious about it. I hate keep people waiting, you know, but I think that stems back to this fellow that used to take me for rides. And one of the comments he made was, I hate waiting for people, you know, and I'm ready to go and I got my stuff on and I got to wait for them. And I can't get that out of my head. And someone once said to me, yeah, if people aren't comfortable waiting for you, you're riding with the wrong people. You know,
bingo.
You should, right. So, but it has its challenges, because I don't, you know, I got the full face. I wear a full face helmet. So then you go into the washroom and think, well, if I take the full face helmet off, now this is going to take like an extra God knows how long. But if I don't take it off, I can't see the belt, where, you know, for the chaps, or I can't see the zipper, or I can't. Yeah, it's a, yeah, you can probably have a nice conversation while you're waiting for me.
I wear a modular, and I tell you what, I love being able to flip that up and get rid of the chin bar so you can see.
That's a good idea.
You know, kind of looking down. And sometimes we're in a hurry, we'll do one of those iron butt stops where it's, you know, sit on the bike, you know, fill the tank, roll the bike out of the way, run in and, you know, do your business and come back out. But yeah. I tell you, I rode with a guy, we rode 7,418 miles in 10 days of riding. And, I don't necessarily feel like at my age, I need to be in a hurry all the time.
Yeah.
And it drives me nuts when somebody gets on their bike and starts their bike, revving their bike. I will intentionally hit a lower gear. I will ratchet the speed down just one more notch. And I'm going to make the point. It's like, dude, if you got a burn to go that bad, and you just ride on, brother, I got a GPS. I'll meet you at the next stop, you know, whatever. But I admire the fact that you've, you know, quickly noodled through that. If you're riding with people that can't do that, I mean, it's the wrong crowd.
Yeah. I mean, and I've learned, you know, same thing as ride your own ride.
That's right. It's not a team sport.
Right? Yeah. Right. You got to feel comfortable. And if people are going a little faster than what you're comfortable with, I mean, you got to ride what you feel comfortable with. I mean, we've been on roads where, you know, you get the bikes behind you and you can tell they just want to go. They just want to go. And it's like, you know, go ahead, ride your ride and I'll ride my ride. But I think one of the coolest places though that I really loved riding was Lake George, New York in the Adirondacks.
Yeah, and, it's, you know, beautiful up there.
Growing up in Montreal, we used to go down there all the time.
Yeah. You know?
And going, we went 2 years ago and oh my God, it was just beautiful. And then there was the Route 97 that we took that ends at Hawk's Nest. It's just incredible. It's so different on a bike, you know, and a friend of mine asked me once, you know, why, what's so different on a bike? And I thought about it and I thought, you know, right. I mean, as bike riders, we know what you get out of it, but it for me, it's just, I don't have to prove myself to anybody, you know? Everybody accepts me. I've never met one person that has, you know, where I've had to prove myself. Like I felt in other things and all your cares just go away, right? For that moment that you're riding, it's unbelievable.
I told somebody this one time, I could ride from my house to California every stop is a conversation. Every, you know, where are you going? What are you riding? How do you like it? Didn't know BMW made motorcycles, blah, blah, blah. You get in a car and do that, you can literally go from here to the coast and not speak to a soul.
Yep.
You get your gas. Unless you're driving a 69 Camaro Super Sport, what's that over your shoulder, James?
Yeah, it's been drawing a lot of attention.
Shameless plug for the classic. But, you know, unless you're driving that across country, which that'll spark some conversation, but a normal car.
I went across country.
Yeah, I mean, right. Nobody talks to you. Nobody cares, right?
Right, yeah.
But on a bike, it breaks a lot of barriers down. That's something I love. And, you know, you were just talking about the way that people would look at you or approach you with your hand situation, and you get on a bike, you're just another rider.
Yep.
You're with us, you're hanging, you know, you're doing your thing. I can't wait till this breaks where I can get you on maybe the rhythm tour, James. You know, we'll do some music, we'll do some riding, we'll get
down. Either that or Yeah, definitely Gettysburg. If you like American history, I mean, I know that you did the Jersey trip, so you got the Sopranos American history of the gangsters of, you know, New York. But heading down to Gettysburg and getting that tour, I'll come up for that one, because I've been through there, but I haven't sat in one of Chris's tours with his guys. And it's just phenomenal information.
We have a blast. That tour is so much fun. People always walk away shocked at what we educate them on regarding Gettysburg and Antietam. And, you know, we have a lot of fun with it. I pick out funny stuff, and I, you know, there's a monument. There's a, looking at it, it looks normal and ordinary. Then you say, you know, there's supposed to be the bust of a guy inside this circle of columns. And he was the commanding, he was the colonel that was in charge of this, you know, unit. The reason he didn't get his bust put into this monument, he was caught embezzling the monies that was being raised to build the monument. So, you know, telling stories about these notorious characters and bringing it to life is a lot of fun for us. And the scenery, you know, I'm blessed in Pennsylvania. We've got some beautiful, beautiful riding. So yeah, you come down, hang out. We got room here, and we can go check it out. And
I love it.
Have
love
a great it. Time. So love before it. We part ways, I want to make sure that we get into a conversation about kind of your next hill to conquer. You've got a movie that you put together.
Yes.
Kind of an indie film, right? Yeah. And didn't you say something about a book?
Yeah, well, the book is, I'm working on it now, and it's in support of the film that we made last year. So the film is actually a documentary about me. It more focuses on the motorcycle aspect of my story. And it's called Angie Tales of Determination. And we've submitted it, my producer and I, to a variety of different film festivals. And most recently, I didn't know there was a Dubai Motorcycle Film Festival, but there is. And they got in touch with us, and they wanted us to shorten it. It's 32 minutes. They wanted us to shorten it to 10. So we said no. So I don't think it's getting into that one. But there's a Portland Motorcycle Film Festival, and there's a Toronto Motorcycle Film Festival, which I believe has been going on since 2017. And that was the one that I actually had in mind. I didn't know that there were all these other film festivals, not just motorcycle. There's all kinds, you know, inspirational festivals. There's a gazillion of them. But I made it with that in mind, because when I got into the motorcycle community, I started, working at the motorcycle shows. We have three a year. So we have the one in January, which is the big one. It's a super show. And then we have the manufacturer show. And then there's the April show, which kind of is a combination of everything. And that's run by Peter Derry, and he's a fantastic guy, and has allowed me to organize an exhibit called Women in Motorcycling.
Nice.
So I've met so many people, and then they say, you know, wow, if you can ride, similar to the guitar, right? How did you ride? How did you get the bike modified? And I didn't realize how many people I was touching and inspiring. And that's kind of what led to the inspirational speaking, which led me to wanting to do this film. Because the other thing was, when I was researching riding and how I could ride, everything I found was in the United States, which is great. But the one thing that I found discouraging was, how come I can't find anything in my home country? And, you know, and I was, like I said, I met Todd with Mission Cycle, and I know there's other shops out there that will, you know, help and do this kind of stuff. So I thought it would just help other people if they're like me or similar, or just even if, yeah, you have all your limbs, you're just thinking, hey, can I ride? Or
yeah.
And when people see me riding, they think about other things that they might be able to do. So yeah. So the film right now, it's not available to the public, only because when it's going through the film festival, when they're going through their selections, you can't have it out there on YouTube and stuff like that. So I'm hoping to release it sometime in 2022, I hope. But we'll see. And the book, yeah, I'm writing the book in support of why I made the film and all the fun that we had doing it. Cause it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I hope the weather pandemic and all that, I hope all this stuff breaks and I get the opportunity to ride with you. And I would love to, I'd love to hang out. I mean, I really enjoy speaking with you. We've had a lot of good conversation, and a couple of times we've been getting this together, and And you just sound like a ball of fun. I watched all the videos with the singing, and we have that in common. And your love of American history, you checked out ridehistory.com and, you know, looked at our website and stuff, and would love to, you know, get it figured out where we could get something together and do a ride together.
Oh, I love that. And I was looking at the rhythm, you know, tour, and yeah, that looks so cool. And I was thinking, I see Beale Street has a bike night, and I believe it's on Wednesdays. And I noticed that you wouldn't be there on a Wednesday.
On purpose. We gotta make Thursday, Friday, and Saturday happen.
But you know what's so funny? One of the things that I really want to do once this COVID thing is behind us and the border opens up, and this is, I guess, my next project that I want to work on is, you know, I've met so many people through Facebook and like yourselves and through other people that have, I just want to film people that have overcome challenges to ride. And I would like to make that my second film and make that a second project, because the story is way bigger than me. And there are so many inspirational people out there. And my mother used to tell me, you never know who you touch. And there's so much negativity in this world, especially now, and hate and anger. And I just think that it's a perfect time to share some positive stories and help people.
Amen.
You know? Yeah.
Amen. There's Raymond, a great.
I just want to thank you both for serving. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Happy to play a small part. I tell you, there's a video out on YouTube, and I'll send you the link, but it's a story called Lollipop Moments. And basically it's an inspirational short presentation this guy gives about the things that you think are so insignificant that have such a major impact on someone. And he said, how many people have had somebody impact their lives like that? And a lot of people raised their hands. And he said, how many of you have actually contacted that person and said, thanks? Yeah. And not very many people raised their hands. And he tells the story. And I tell people, it's a leadership conference that he's giving this pitch at. And he said, everyday leaders, he said, you don't realize the things that you do in life and the impact, that's leadership. Mm-hmm. And so you're leading the way. I love that. And not to be deterred, not to be told no, whatever the challenge is, whether it's I'm a female and I don't think I could ride, I wouldn't fit in, or it's somebody that has a different ability who doesn't feel like, you know, I've seen bikes turned into trikes where the wheelchair can roll right into the back. Mm-hmm. And it's all hand controlled. I've seen people, you know, and the community's willingness to help that person overcome that. You know, you want to get in the wind, we'll freaking build a bike for you, you know, and we'll figure it out. And that's something that I just absolutely love about the motorcycle community, especially because they're just big hearts. I don't care what everybody says about all the, you know, the myths and the just big hearted people, man.
There's a reason why we always wave at each other.
Yeah, for sure.
And when you pass me, you will see that I wave a little differently than everybody else. And I'm not. and I do have my left hand on the handlebar, and I lift my two fingers.
I was going to say, you're not going to do the hands-free thing and give me your left hand?
No. I'm not that bold, but I will raise my right hand in a certain motion that you might think, what the hell are they trying to tell me?
Yeah.
But I'm saying hi.
That's funny.
My mantra is I live by why discourage when you can encourage. And I've just been blessed with having the opportunity to meet people like yourselves and others that, you know, I just feel that I can make a bit of a difference, you know.
You already have.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, so many of us have challenges, and, you know, today is better than yesterday. And listen, I'm going through my carpal tunnel surgery, and it's been a week, and I don't, you know, like asking for help, and it gets frustrating, and I lose my patience. I know.
Let that heal so we can ride together.
Stop it. Yeah, I know.
You know, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I can't thank you enough. And please, I hope you don't mind, but I would love to stay in touch down, you know,
please,
anyway.
Yes.
And definitely when the border opens up, I can't wait to get up to Canada and do some more riding. And you're certainly welcome to come down here, and anything I can share with you about our history or anything that you're interested in, would love nothing more than to host you and have you and your husband come down and hang out with us.
Oh, listen, I'm going to take you up on that for sure. And you guys want to come up here, I'd love to take you on some tours. I mean, there are some great roads here, and I also want to get head out east, right? I mean, like where the Cabot Trail is and all that.
Yeah. That's one of my, on my list, Canadian Army, buddy of mine, met through Facebook. He's a newfie like Jerry. Mm-hmm. And that's an area that it's on my list. I've got to get to. And, so it'd be great. We can meet somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, along the way and go pester Jerry for a little while, right? And then,
My buddies say you go to Americade, you go to Laconia, then you go to Atlanticade. And if you hang around long enough, you can catch a Wharf Rat Rally. So you can get, like, you know, I mean, it's a lot of months, but
I can't wait to retire where I can just hang out and do that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, no kidding.
Counting the days, right?
Well, I'm telling you, I've said this before and I meant it sincerely. Very inspirational story. Really, really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us. It's been great getting to know you better. And, the last question I have is, if I make the trip to Canada and I come up to hang out and you show me the ropes, do I get a backstage pass?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome.
You'll have to put him on stage. He's quite the singer.
Well, listen, I have no problem with that because sometimes I like to sit down and just have a beer, right? So exactly. I can be entertained too.
And, you know, exactly.
I have no problem with that.
I'd be entertaining, I'm sure.
I appreciate that you're, you know, taking this time out tonight, Angie. It's been great talking to you. Again, thank you so much for coming on. I'd love to have you on another time. Maybe after the arm is all healed and you can break out the guitar.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Play some AC/DC for us.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. That would be cool.
Or some Led Zeppelin.
Let's write this down. All right.
Done deal.
The list.
Oh, it's there, is it?
We're putting it on the calendar.
All right.
All right.
Well, guys, have a great rest of your evening. Tell your husband thanks for letting us borrow you for a while. Yeah. And we'll make sure you get a copy of the, I don't know, you probably, but we'll send you a link to the, in case you're not on the podcast feed, we'll send you a link.
I'm subscribed to it, but yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Our one subscriber.
No.
Not only are you a subscriber, you're now part of the show.
There you go, right?
Yeah, and yeah. And a superhero.
Yeah. I'll be sharing it all over the place. So, you know,
good.
All those
appreciate
Facebook
that.
Recycle pages. And yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, you just reminded me, James. I forgot to ask her. So, do you watch Letterkenny?
No.
What? Oh, my God.
I heard about it. Oh, no. I should watch it.
We were on a motorcycle trip. And yeah. James pulls his laptop out and he goes,
it was a rainy day.
And what's crazy.
Yeah.
I live 20 minutes from Letterkenny Army Depot. And he goes, have you seen Letterkenny? And I go, yeah, I ride by it every time I go up 522. And he's like, no, the show. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, oh my God. And he starts playing this show. And there's a guy who plurals every word. That's what I loves about you. I appreciate about you.
I don't know how he does it.
I don't either, but hilarious.
It's absolute talent at its best.
It is. The dude's a rock star, and it freaking Canadians, man. Great sense of humor. I'm telling you, it's some funny stuff. I can't believe they don't have something televised. I mean, they're that funny.
What, did you ever see Schitt's Creek?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you know about Schitt's Creek. Yeah, yeah.
I've always been a huge fan of Eugene Levy from mm-hmm. back in the Second City days he was with, you know, John Candy and everybody else. I was born in 69. I remember some of the first shows that I watched were those. You know, that was Saturday Night Live was just out, and this was like Canada's answer to Saturday Night Live. Was Second City.
Yeah.
I think it was Second City TV.
Yeah, SCTV.
Yeah, SCTV.
Yeah, we all watched SCTV growing up.
Oh, yeah.
Some of us were driving though, James.
You said you were born in
69?
Yeah. Oh. I'm not old like you.
That's funny.
That's why I got a 69 Camaro. It's the same birth year.
I want a 62 Vette.
Well, if you're going to go for your birth year, you got to get a 25 Cadillac, right?
Look, first episode, it was 1903, and I was putting a tomato can for a carburetor on a Harley Davidson. What is it, 1903, 1923? How freaking old? You're old. Skyler, you know, it's nice about doing American history-based tours. I'm just reliving some childhood stories. Oh, God.
All right, let's end this thing.
All right.
Everybody, thank you again. I appreciate it. Ride her out.
Ride her out.
Bye-bye.